faction. Well, in the a few of you heard that, especially if you came out of the 60s. Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones put that song out, that famous song, back in 1965. And in an interview years later, Mick Jagger commented on the song's appeal and said, "It was really that song that really made the Rolling Stones change. It changed us from just another band into a huge monster band. The song has a very catchy title. It has a very catchy guitar riff. It has a great guitar sound, which was original at the time. It captures the spirit of the times, which is very important in those kinds of songs." Mick Jagger, the Rolling Stones, and he's still singing at 103 years old, it seems like. So what Mick Jagger calls the spirit of the times, this is from the times of the 60s, really has been the spirit of the times for all of human history. Throughout all of human history, people have always tried to seek out satisfaction, right, in one thing or another. And another word for satisfaction might be the word fulfillment. And the whole world is on a grand search for it and has always been. But the writer to the book of Ecclesiastes also wants to tell us that lasting satisfaction is not where we think it is. And he should know, because he claims to have been on an extensive search for it. So it's clear that the writer of Ecclesiastes, and it's put in the person of Solomon, whether it's actually Solomon or somebody else, we're not really exactly sure. There's arguments for and against both of those. But he's on a search for truth. And it's not some meaningless search for truth or experimentation like some hedonistic journey of some of the bands of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s, and everything else. Toward the end of chapter 1, where I talked about last week, he says that his search for wisdom is part of this great experiment. So he says in the last chapter, and I didn't talk about this last week, he says, "I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to search out wisdom by all that is done under heaven." And then verse 17 says, "I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly." So this is this big experiment. It's not some just random hedonistic journey that he sort of fell into. He's doing all these things intentionally. He's experimenting with all parts of life intentionally to see if he can find the meaning of life and what is lasting satisfaction. And he has the resources to do this. If he is the king of Israel, and if he is Solomon, then certainly he has the ability to do that. Now, I personally would love to have all the resources at my disposal to lay on every single sunny beach of this planet and to see if I can finally find lasting satisfaction, if I had the resources. Wouldn't you want to do that? Or experiment all kinds of things within certain bounds. And I would be willing, and Denise and I have talked about this when we were younger in our missionary days, we would love to have God trust us enough with lots of money. But he never did, right? God has sought to never trust Denise and Gibb with any money. So God in his wisdom has not given us a lot of cash, but he apparently has given the writer to Ecclesiastes a lot of it. And so he has the resources to do this kind of research. So let's look at some of the things in this chapter 2 that he's been experimenting with. I'm going to read it, and I listed some things on here that we can follow. He says, "I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter," I listed them here. "I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I search with my heart how to cheer my body with wine." I really know a lot of people who are into wine. My heart still guiding me with wisdom. He's telling this is all part of the experiment. "And how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees." I mean, if you're into gardening, some people find satisfaction, lasting satisfaction, or think they do in gardening. He tried. I made myself pool. I bought male and female slaves and had the slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. Boy, I tell you, I know farmers, or rather ranchers in western Kansas, that would love another 1,000 head of cattle if they had the land to put them in. And there are feedlots out there that have 100,000 cattle. And it's just amazing. And so he has a lot. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and treasures of kings and provinces. I got singers, both of men and women. He had his own rock bands, various kinds of bands that he was able to hire to play at his parties. Many concubines, the delights of the sons of man. This guy has been a busy little beaver, right? So I talked last week about the repeated phrase in the book of Ecclesiastes, under the sun or under heaven, okay? And it's repeated at least 30 times plus in the book of Ecclesiastes. And it refers, it's a kind of a code word that means it refers to that part of reality that we can experience, that is something we can experience, we can see with our eyes, but a reality that is separated from God's reality, right? In some ways, it's sort of the counterpart to the Garden of Eden and then being thrown out of the Garden of Eden. Life under the sun is life outside of God's presence, out of the Garden of Eden, okay? Life above the sun is the Garden of Eden. Life above the sun is a life with God. But so life under the sun is in reality a secularist kind of reality, of one who either denies God exists or one who maybe says God exists but lives as if God does not exist. Okay. So it's this great experiment to find satisfaction in all things. He's doing this in a life under the sun. And he's found nothing. He found nothing to satisfy him. Under the sun, of all these things, and really the whole book is an experiment of all these things that he plays with. And he lists all kinds of things in the whole book of Ecclesiastes. Nothing, nothing, nothing. He could not find satisfaction, lasting fulfillment in anything. So here's what he says about his research. He says, "And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I'd expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity. And it's striving after the wind. There was nothing to be gained under the sun." Many years ago, I think I've told this illustration before, but my great aunt, used to work at the famous Beverly Hills Hotel in Beverly Hills, and back in the 50s. And one of the people who lived there long term, different periods, was Howard Hughes. And she would come to the house, because we lived out in the San Fernando Valley at the time in Southern California. And she would come and she would tell stories about having talked to Howard Hughes, and you know, he'd come by the receptionist area where she worked. And but in his days, if you don't know, Howard Hughes was built one of the greatest financial empires of the time. He had the most glamorous women that he could buy. He wanted adventure, and so he set airspeed records. Designed some of the world's most unique and interesting aircraft. He had also the power to acquire political clout. He crashed Hollywood and owned studios and made movies. His first movies, we saw a Jane Russell movie, one of your movies, but that was the first movie that he made with Jane Russell. It was called some Western movie. Anybody remember? Anyway, he did that. He courted them. He was in relationship with Hollywood people. In his book on Howard Hughes, Michael Grossen describes how his life ended. For those of you who don't know the story, he sort of spent his last part of his life in a hotel in Las Vegas. He describes him as a figure of Gothic horror, ready for the grave, emaciated, only 100 pounds stretched over his 6'4" frame, thin, scraggly beard that reached midway into his sunken chest, hideously long nails in grotesque yellow corkscrews. Many of his teeth were black, rotting stumps. A tumor was beginning to emerge from the side of his head, innumerable needle marks. Howard Hughes, as an addict, a billionaire junkie. Then after having, Howard Hughes having had spent a lifetime experimenting with all that this world offers under the sun, he did something extremely short-sighted. He died. The teacher of Ecclesiastes did the research. He added two and two and came up with nothing. Then I considered that all my hands had done, the toil I'd expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity, a striving after the wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So I mentioned last week, again, that in the book of Ecclesiastes, the perspective of life under the sun is a life away from God as the center of life. But I also said that every once in a while, throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, God pops up. Not often, actually. Not often as we'd like, but God shows up periodically as we go through this book. And when he does, then life becomes worth living. So toward the end of chapter 2, he said that God is the one who makes life satisfying and enjoyable. He says, there is nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also, I saw, is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or do or eat or who can have enjoyment? For the one who pleases him, God has given him wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to one who pleases God. This is also a vanity and a striving after the wind. Here's what humans do. We spend our whole lives looking for lasting satisfaction in all that the world offers under the sun. And in the end, they don't find it, ever. But the wisdom of Ecclesiastes says that if God is the object of life, if God is the center of life, then all of life, the rest of the stuff that is under the sun, normal daily life, that is filled with enjoyment and satisfaction. When we seek that enjoyment and satisfaction under the things under the sun, we don't find it. When we find the one who lives above the sun, we make him our center, we make him our goal. Everything else under the sun, within the boundaries of the law, becomes full of enjoyment and joy. Jesus said something in Matthew, I think 6, he said, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and then all these things will be added unto you. It's the same kind of idea. If God is first, life is great. If God is not first, if he's second, you know, in other words, other things are first, that doesn't work either. Can't get no satisfaction, according to the song, because you're looking for it in the wrong places. And all of God is promised in and through a relationship with Jesus Christ. So, we're in Lent, coronavirus and all. Lent is a time of that self-reflection. A time of looking at ourselves in a little more serious way. God's word, as has been said by many people, is like a mirror, right? That we can hold up to our lives, and it tells the truth about ourselves. It tells us about the law, what God expects. It tells us how our lives are. And if we're honest enough to take a long, hard look into the mirror and be honest about that, the Lord will tell us where we're putting things under the sun above God. And ultimately, we have to choose what we're going to do with that when God reveals that. So this is a time of Lent, a time of self-reflection. And the mirror has been set up. And maybe in some small way, we set up the mirror tonight of all the things we look for satisfaction. Maybe this week you'll think about that. Maybe identify something that you're trying to find lasting fulfillment in, lasting satisfaction. You're wasting your time. It's meaningless. It's a vanity. But I believe that you can find satisfaction even in that thing if God is first. But don't play games with that. Make sure God is first. So the mirror is set up. And may God give us the courage and the honesty to look straight at it. Oh, man, that's all I had to say.